From the University of Central Florida's Center for Distributed Learning, I'm Tom Cavanaugh.
I'm Calvin Thompson.
And you are listening to TopCast, the teaching online podcast. Hello, Calvin.
Hey, Tom.
How are things today?
They're zenerific.
Zenerific. That's awesome. So if you're new to TopCast, you may not realize what you're in for.
Oh, boy. Buckle your seatbelts.
Buckle your seatbelts. Because you are in the presence of a true coffee expert.
Oh, man.
And every episode, Kelvin shares a thematically selected cup of Java.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure today is no exception.
Uh-huh. That's true. It is thematically selected.
So, Kelvin, what's in the thermos?
Yep. Well, so today, Tom, we have a very carefully chosen coffee that I go back to again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, I like this. It's got a nice taste to it. But it might be surprising to you and our listeners. So this coffee, Tom, is ready for this?
Ready.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Love Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
So here's why. So actually, I do like Dunkin' Donuts a lot. For a coffee that it's already brewed for you and you go through the drive-through or whatever, it's actually, I think, a good cup of coffee. But you can find Dunkin' Donuts many, many places, just like I think they're sort of, in some places, I guess, competitors with Starbucks. You kind of like, are you a Starbucks person or a Dunkin' Donuts person? But, you know, you can find them everywhere. But also, it's very easy to get that cup of coffee, whether you are driving up in the drive-through, whether you go into the store, whether you're stepping up out of the car, whether you're cruising up on your bike, whether you're in a chair and you got to go up a curb cut, whatever, you know, there it's easy to get into Dunkin' Donuts and get a cup of coffee.
Yeah,
it's literally very accessible coffee.
I passed three of them. I'm taking my son to school in the morning. Literally, I passed three of them.
You should stop and have a cup of coffee sometime.
I should.
Maybe a donut.
I probably would. I like it.
Yeah,
I have had it before, and I like it.
That's right. Still good. So I don't know if you can see a connection, because you know what we're talking about today, Tom. What
I
are we talking about?
So it is easy to find and access a Dunkin' Donuts cup of coffee.
It's true.
So we are talking about not access, but accessibility.
Accessibility. We have talked about access.
We have. We've talked about the Iron Triangle, and that is one of the bars of the Iron Triangle.
That's right.
Which is access. And I guess this is sort of a facet of that. I think that the spirit of that is really more about access to education kind of writ large.
Yeah.
But, you know, a piece of that, a facet of that, is access for a population of students who have, in many cases in the past, been disenfranchised or who haven't had the ability to access education because of physical or learning or other disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about accessibility in that sense for students who need an accommodation.
Yep. That is absolutely true. You don't need to be told this, but our listeners might not know that we are way passionate about this here at
we
UCF.
We are,
It is very much a thing, as I'm sure it is in many, many places. I do find myself a little bit saddened sometimes when I have conversations with colleagues where the tone of the conversation is one of compliance, like, oh, man, you know, or we're going to get sued, fear, or something. Because we really undertake this because we see this as part of the job as online education professionals. We've got to be concerned about accessibility.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. We've got a number of staff on the team here at the Center for Distributed Learning.
World-class folks.
Yeah, they really care about this stuff and have become something of nationally recognized experts in it, doing webinars and keynotes and other kinds of outreach. And I've personally learned a lot from them.
Yes.
And I think the proper place to start, as you say, is this is the right thing to do for students.
Yes.
And if you do the right thing for students, then hopefully all of those compliance and legal things kind of fall into place.
That's right. No guarantees.
No.
For not offering legal advice.
No. Yeah. Caveat. Yes. Disclaimer. Fine print. Whatever we say, keep in mind that if you're listening to this, neither one of us is a lawyer.
That's right.
Or a compliance expert.
That's right.
We're just a couple of dudes
drinking a cup of coffee.
Drinking a cup of coffee, trying to do the right thing. And two, at some point, I don't know at what point you're listening to this, it could be that laws, rules, and things have changed.
That's right.
Things change all the time.
That's right.
And so it may be something's changed. So, you know, look up the latest information before you take any action. But I guess that the plan for today is to just talk a little bit about what we do here.
Yes.
Not that it is perfect, not that it's the model, but it's something that we've taken a few years to develop.
Yes.
And
continue to work at.
Continue to work at, and it's still evolving, but it's working a lot better now than it was in the past.
Yeah.
And that is not to say that there isn't great work being done elsewhere.
Because there indeed is. We talk to colleagues all over the place, and oh, that's great. That's a great idea. That's a great tool. That's a great committee structure. That's a great workflow process. Whatever, you know, things that we can learn from.
Absolutely, and we do.
Yes.
So we are aware that other schools are doing some amazing things in this space, and we learn from them every day. I think the limitations of the time that we've self-imposed on ourselves for an episode precludes us being able to kind of explore all of those in detail. Maybe we will in the future.
Yeah.
But right now, we were just going to talk a little personally about what we do here at UCF and see if maybe that has some benefit for others.
And I guess what maybe has the broadest applicability, I'll start with this, is to say that we'll share an organizing framework that we come back to again and again as we do our work related to accessibility here. And that framework, maybe if you're listening, maybe you find this framework applicable. And then as we talk about the specific tools, concepts, and processes, maybe your context will vary a little bit, but maybe the model itself will be useful. So I'll throw this out there. It's what, you know, I like to call the Parthenon, right? So we started really revitalizing we've been working on accessibility for as long as I've been here, 18 years at UCF. But a few years ago, we really like, okay, let's tighten up our belt and let's really make sure that we're working on some stuff. You were involved in some cross-institutional efforts. So, okay, what are we doing? And as I got really more directly involved, I laid out this, because this is how simple I am. I laid out this simple rudimentary child drawing like model that is just three columns and an overarching roof. You can kind of see this, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes, and a floor. So there's like a roof, a floor, and three columns. I call it the Parthenon because that's about as much of a Parthenon as I can draw. And it's like, well, accessibility is a lot of things. A lot of people just kind of go with like basic compliance. And so certainly dealing with accommodations right now, right here and right now, the immediate accommodation needs for a particular student in a particular course in a particular semester, that's a thing. But that's not the whole thing. There's also, as all good instructional designers, we know that universal design for learning principles, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. And for years, we've woven that into the fabric of our faculty development programs, UDL, right? So that's important. But then we've seen this a lot, kind of the middle column is, okay, yeah, you did a good job designing that online course with UDL in mind at the beginning, but things happen over time, you know? Ooh, let me add that video in, and ooh, here's a cool graphic, or oh, let me just make this. And things sprawl, and maybe it's not quite what, you know, you wanted it to be back at the beginning. And so how do you bridge the gap between what your good intentions are and what everybody needs before you actually have a student registered with your student accessibility services office or whatever you call it at your institution, mm-hmm. Is enrolled in a course. So we have our accommodations pillar, our UDL pillar, and what we call our proactive pillar. So and all that's accessibility.
So let me jump in a little bit too.
Please do.
I remember drawing some of this on the whiteboard too back in the day.
And we haven't gotten to the part that you added in there too, and that, which I think is very important.
The some of the thinking, well, everything, I agree with everything you say, and I think we are trying to do some of that. I think there's another layer too that I had in my mind when I was conceptualizing some of this back then. So we have, and some of it was driven out of just, you know, are we all like, you know, not sharing this with everybody. So
yeah, let's just keep it just among
just
us.
Just between us. So a few years ago, we had a bit of a crisis. There was a course that needed to be accommodated. We had a student in there, and there was some content in the course that was not, accessible.
Just that one.
Yeah, just one. Yeah. Well, there was one that made it to the provost's office. So Uh-oh. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of scramble and do what we needed to do, which we did. And it was a bit of a fire drill, and it forced us to take a step back and say, okay. And not just us as a Center for Distributed Learning or a student accessibility office, but sort of as an institution, yeah. and say, what do we really need? And we ended up after that hiring a new position, a yep. leadership position yep. in the student accessibility office. And all of that was good. We learned mm-hmm. from it and we corrected. But that was the immediate need, the fire drill.
Yep.
And then that course is done. But what about the next course that the student has to take? So in addition to trying to have some foresight into the content and yep. how to make that accessible. There's also, what are the next three courses that yep. that student has
That's
to take?
Right.
And can we get out ahead of that?
Yes.
And I know students, just because they need accommodation doesn't mean they're not students who behave like students. They change their minds and they yep. drop classes and mm-hmm. everything else. But you can at least have a path yep. that you can start working on. And then, of course, the ideal is the UDL,
right.
Universal Design for Learning, and try to build all that into the process, because it gets so much more expensive
mm-hmm.
the closer you get to that fire drill, that immediate need, that for the same amount of effort,
yep.
you could have built it in at the front,
yep.
maybe for less effort
yep.
and less expense and a lot less stress on yep. everybody.
Yeah, and that's all exactly right. And that gets to what I call the floor in the Parthenon, mm-hmm. which was really your floor.
Yeah.
And so you might talk about that a little bit, our faculty-centric versus services-centric kind of dimension to this.
Yeah, so if we look at the far right side of this Parthenon, where it's the immediate need, that fire mm-hmm. drill, oh my gosh, I've got a student, I just got a letter, I've got a student in my class, and I need to have my videos captioned mm-hmm. or something. It's not the faculty member that's going to be doing that.
Yeah.
It's the central support unit
that's right.
that's going to be doing that. So we end up dropping everything and
right.
captioning or working with somebody to caption it.
Yep.
And it becomes a very centralized support services-centric kinds of solution.
Mm-hmm.
But the further left you move on that Parthenon, the more it becomes, because our model is faculty build their courses with our support, it becomes more faculty mindset, faculty-driven, faculty-centric, as it says on the chart,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Kind of an effort. So mm-hmm. building in universal design practices into your course is just a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's something that faculty can do without a whole lot of help from us, except
right.
in certain technical situations. So if they want captions on their course, great.
Yeah.
Give us a couple of weeks
yeah,
and
yeah,
we can
right.
do it.
Sure.
Don't come in and say, I need this by Thursday right. or else I'm going to be out of compliance.
That's right. No, I think that was a very important dimension to add in. But okay, so here's where I played devil's advocate for a second, because I think this is the challenge, because that makes total sense, right? That it makes sense to be more strategic, to be more UDL-oriented, to periodically try to be proactive and so forth, to move toward before being right there, as you say, in the house is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason the fire drill was pulled, is because there's actual flames. things are those accommodation things are going on and people are running around frantically. It makes sense to be more strategic and be more UDL. But if I'm a faculty member teaching a course, perhaps it's more strategic for me to go, so what you're saying is...
I just have to wait until the end.
There it is.
Yeah, well, I don't ascribe that sort of, nefarious cleverness to our faculty. I think most faculty want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
99.9% of them. I don't see anybody. I'm not, frankly, I'll just say this. I'm not worried about that problem.
Yeah.
We've got a good relationship with our faculty.
Yes.
They want to do the right thing. And it's a question of informing them ahead of time mm-hmm. so they understand, because sometimes if they haven't encountered this, it's just new.
It's absolutely right.
And the other thing is trying to make it easy for them. So I think a bigger risk is, and unfortunately I've seen this, it's like, all right, I'm just going to take the videos out of my course.
Yes.
That's not good.
So unpack that for a second. What's that mind? What's that thought process?
It's a sort of path of least resistance. I don't have time to make these accommodations in this piece of media or whatever it is. Yeah. And I know I have to have equal for everybody, so I'm just going to take it out for everybody.
Yeah.
And that, I think, does a disservice to everybody. Yes. It does a disservice to the quality of the course.
That's right.
And what I'd rather have is a proactive relationship with the faculty so that we don't have to have that kind of a decision.
Yes.
So that we can be building in good practices from the beginning. Start talking to us, you know, at the beginning of the semester before you deliver the course.
Yeah.
We have plenty of time that we can help, you know, give you the support that you need, whatever it might be, whether it's developing a different kind of assessment coming up with captions or whatever it is, because we've kind of seen it all.
Yeah.
And I think most of the faculty, once you kind of have that conversation with them, they're totally on board.
Yeah. I think you make an excellent point there. And I think you're right. That's the reason that we weave in UDL principles into our faculty development, is to bring up that baseline awareness to make sure that people know what the issues are. And I'll throw this little factoid in. You know, we try to be data-based in our decision-making around here and through. I should give a shout-out. We talked about our world-class instructional designers who focus on this, our UCF colleagues, Kathleen Bastido, Nancy Swenson, John Rabel in particular. John worked with one of our developers to use one of our, what we call our executive information system, to actually pull institutional data and present, in general, the EIS, as we call it, aggregates institutional data and allows us to see patterns and make decisions related to online education.
I look at it almost every day.
It's great. It's wonderful. Charts and graphs. It's great. But John worked with one of our developers, Brandon Stahl, to pull in what we've got, and it's not always the best data, but what we've got related to accommodations, accessibility, and so forth. And so this is attention getting you ready, and we'll put something like this in the show notes. So like you said, from that individual faculty, oh, this doesn't affect me, or it's not going to affect me, let me roll the dice kind of thing. That could be a mindset if I'm not aware of what the issue is. This is attention getting. So I think this is from a recent semester, if I remember correctly. The number is something like 2 or 3% of our complete student body are registered with the Office of Student Accessibility Services. You know, we're a big institution, mm-hmm. 2 or 3%. Still a lot of students, but it's not 90%, right? And so you can go, 2, 3%, you know, no big deal. It's still a big deal for those individuals, right? And we should comment that what we see in the literature, if you're following this thread, is that we know that many students who have disabilities of some sort do not register with such offices for various reasons. They don't want to self-disclose. So that's an issue too. But 2 or 3%, Well, what we found pulling these data in with these charts is, but if you look at the number of, just look at the course sections across the institution, it's a big number. It's more like 40% of course sections in a given semester are touched by mm-hmm. those students.
Mm-hmm.
So 2-3% of students, but 40% of your course sections and something like 60% of faculty at the institution are teaching courses that include students who legally need these accommodations. So it's in all of our best interest, to get back to your point, to do this right from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, that particular report in the EIS, the Executive Information System, is I think especially impressive. It pulls in data sources from three different university systems and aggregates it into one place, and it displays a listing of all the faculty. It protects student identity. There's no identifying information
there. That's
right. It brings in the faculty and each section they teach, and the number of accommodations and the type of accommodations.
Yep.
And you can sort it by the term, by the modality. So we are kind of responsible for online and blended courses here. We could sort it just for those and see what's coming up mm-hmm. next term and get in touch with those faculty and say, look, you've got these accommodations coming up. Let's look at your course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really great in allowing us to do that middle pillar, the proactive needs.
That's right.
And then, and if I think about maybe that far left pillar, the universal design for learning, you know, it's really important to enforce some standards. And faculty aren't always thrilled with that. Mm. So for, I'll give one example. If we produce a video for a faculty member, we generally require, I'll put that in air quotes so our podcast audience can see that.
I heard them.
Yeah. We generally require that they come in with a script or a transcript.
Yep.
And this is something that happened in the past. We have now got the ability to help them with that, but at the time we didn't. And it's a lot of work, especially if you're used to talking extemporaneously and we record somebody who's just kind of doing a mini lecture, a 10-minute lecture or something. It's hard to go back and caption that or transcript it. And we had a particular faculty member, I think it was a speech class, and she didn't want to do it. And I totally understand why, because it's a lot of work. It wasn't that she didn't want to philosophically. She just was busy.
Yeah, right.
And she did. At great effort, we put the captions on the videos. And the very next semester, she had somebody who needed that exact accommodation. Yep. She became a believer.
Yeah, it's like, wow, it affects me.
Exactly, because she recognized that she would have never been able to get those done in time to support that student had we not been proactive about it ahead of time. So that was, I think that was sort of a win-win, and it's an anecdote we can share with other faculty because it's a real story and it's something that they could face as well.
Yep. Now, we've talked a lot about UDL and proactive, but to follow up on that, the actual immediate needs of accommodations in a particular term, we've worked really closely with our Student Accessibility Services office and have articulated a workflow with them. And for our online and blended courses of the institution, you know, they have their own workflow for quote-unquote traditional face-to-face courses. But we work at that constantly. We're in constant contact, and we have a member of our staff who, when there's the existing process of, hey, you're going to teach a course next semester, and there's a student who needs an accommodation, and this is the kind of accommodation that they need, we reach out and offer to help and make some recommendations and so forth and try to broker that. And work up a punch list of what needs to happen. It back to your fire analogy, right? Everybody's, whoa, pull out the fire hoses. It's much better if we're not at that point, but we do that.
Well, I think we've got a really good partnership with that office, and it's a true partnership.
It is.
It's two ways, and it works great. Their scope is bigger than just online courses.
That's right.
But online courses, because of their nature, have a particular kind of accommodation set of issues that have to be addressed. And you chair, convene what you call the Big Picture Accessibility Group periodically.
Yep.
And you want to say a few words about that?
What we've found is, because we do take this seriously, I think this is a good success story. Culturally, we take this so seriously that we've found there was just a lot of stuff going on. And to bring this organizing framework that we call the Parthenon, right, under the umbrella of, or the roof of accessibility, there are these three pillars we talked about. It gave us a way to, hey, let's all find out what we're doing individually and make sure that we're all pointed in the same direction. You know, certainly we didn't expect to be working at cross purposes, but let's not duplicate effort and let's look for what's missing right now, right? So I think early on, of course, we're always going to need to continue to improve on the accommodations part and make that as efficient as possible and all.
But there are some handoffs between the offices.
That's right. And how can we improve that? And maybe there's more that we can do on the proactive part. How do we facilitate that and encourage that? Mm-hmm. Maybe there's more we can do on the UDL part. Maybe we can make it easier for faculty to do things themselves. And so we've gotten to things like just a concrete thing. We've our team of developers put together this this LTI, Learning Tools Interoperability Standard, in our learning management system that we call You Do It, you know, which is an accessibility checker.
Yeah, it's self-serve. Awesome. If you happen to be using the Canvas Learning Management System, there's no reason why you shouldn't be using You Do It.
It's free.
It's free. It's available out on GitHub. Maybe we'll put a link.
Yeah.
It's really great. It's been adopted by a number of other schools and systems, and maybe even we could put a link to the, if it's still out there, the session that Jacob Bates did at InstructureCon.
Sure.
I think that's worth watching. It's not very long.
Yeah, the You Do It Daddy, Jacob Bates. Yeah. So that's just one case. case of many. So we find that we need to get together like once a semester and, okay, let's make sure we're all on the same page, and then where is there an opportunity to work with each other? How do we better communicate to our constituents and so forth? So I guess a couple things. One, you're never done.
Yes, that is true.
And two, and I haven't said this, I usually can't talk about accessibility for 5 minutes without mentioning this because our folks get tired of me saying this. And this may be controversial sounding, but here you go, Tom. You ready?
Ready.
There's no such thing as 100% accessible.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's a goal.
Yep.
And you strive for that, but it's hard.
That's right.
It's really hard. So, yeah, it's a, what did you just say? It's a journey,
it's right,
not a destination.
Not a destination, right?
Yeah,
it you keep working at it. And just because you've UDL'd, if that's a thing,
yeah.
You've UDL'd a course from the beginning, don't think that you're not going to still have some work to do. If you've got a particular student with a particular set of abilities and needs in a course, in a particular semester, don't think that you're not going to need to change something.
Yeah, and we want our faculty and our instructional designers and our media producers to be innovative.
Yes.
To push the envelope. And sometimes that presents accessibility challenges.
That's right.
And so that's to your point that it's never 100% accessible.
Yeah.
We don't want somebody to just say, oh, I'm just going to do text on a screen because
yep.
I know it's accessible. Well, that's not the point.
Mm-mm.
We want it to be really good. We want it to be engaging.
For everybody.
For everybody, exactly. And that, in fact, that's some advantages to UDL. So, for yep. example, if you just put captions on a video, that helps people who maybe don't speak English as a first language.
Yeah.
It's not an accessibility issue.
That's exactly right.
But it's something that helps everybody.
Yeah, the old thing, right, of curb cuts. Curb cuts are not just for people in wheelchairs. They're good for strollers and
yep.
for skateboards because
yep.
we have a lot of skateboards around here, you know, or bicycles or whatever, right? Or those handles that make it really easy for me to carry in my 3 cups of coffee, you know, right?
Yeah.
So we all benefit. So I guess we need to wrap this up, but I will give a particular shout out. This episode's show notes will be replete with resources.
Yeah, we've got a bunch. I think we have a faculty seminar that we did on
yes.
this subject. We can put that out there.
Yeah,
feel free to watch that.
We've got articles. We got stuff.
Yeah. So maybe to land the plane here, mm-hmm. it's a journey, not mm-hmm. a process.
Not a destination.
Sorry. It's a process, not a destination. It's a journey, not a destination.
Yeah.
Get your metaphor right, Kavanaugh.
That's right.
You strive for 100% accessible, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Recognizing that that as long as you're pushing the envelope, you're probably always going to be striving for it,
yep.
and that's okay. I think
yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, what's best for the student
mm-hmm.
and what's best for all students mm-hmm. is sort of the mantra that we try to live by.
And working for this aspirational goal is the right thing to do. Period.
That's a great place to end it. All right. So until next time, for TopCast, I'm Tom.
I'm Kelvin.
See ya.